Mark Dorison of the Orange County Board of Commissioners joining us now in the studio to help wrap up the week. How are you?
Oh, I couldn't be any better. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Do you feel good about the fact that the president is setting such a low bar for other elected officials to demonstrate their skills and talents as reasoned officials?
I do appreciate that, although I would happily trade that off for some more presidential behavior and policies. So it's funny. As I was driving here, I was thinking. I wanted to ask you. Mm-hmm. I was just listening to NPR, and they had a whole story about whether it was appropriate to use the word on the radio or not use the word. And I was wondering what WCHL's policy was related to that.
CBS News earlier today. Apparently, I did not hear this, but Blake, our news director, was telling me that CBS News apparently used the phrase "expletive hole." Like just said expletive hole out loud, and I thought that was great that we should continue doing that. But I think the thing that I am going to take from today that I'm going to remember is the fact that we had a conversation about that here on the air. Like, we're hyper-local. We'll focus on local news primarily, but you got to talk about it. So Blake Hodge and I go back to our general manager, Aubrey Williams. This was going to be Blake's conversation, and I was like, I have to hear this because this is historic. We go back, and I'm just standing there, and Blake is like, so can we use this word on the air? And we actually had to have a conversation about this, which is ridiculous, the fact that like we're at that point as a society where this is the level of national discourse where we have to have a conversation about whether it's allowed to use a word like that.
I know. It was really interesting listening to the story, you know, on NPR. And so there's all the substantive news about mm-hmm. what's happening in this meeting and the president's attitude. And then there are all these permutations of it, mm-hmm. as to, you know, what can you say on the news? What shouldn't you say on the news? You know, there's standards and decency and FCC. And then there's also questions about if you say, you know, the president used a vulgar term,
right?
Does that soften it in a way in the reporting? Right. I mean that, and I guess, you know, that's among the many new issues that the president has brought to us mm-hmm. in the community. That's just another aspect of it.
And this goes down so many levels because, I mean, the Racial Equity Institute just had their groundwater training on racial equity that I was not able to go to, but Mark Schultz was from the Herald Sun, and he wrote a great piece on it that's on their website.
Yes, I saw that. It was excellent.
And the first thing that they talked about, or one of the things that they focused on in that, is the extent to which the use of language affects the way that people think about a particular issue. So if you use a whole bunch of euphemisms, that does soften the reality, and that affects people's thinking, and that's something that you don't want to do as a journalist, but you end up doing it anyway, one way or the other.
It's true, and it's really you know, the how we talk about the story then becomes in some ways as important as, again, the substance of the story itself. You know, there's a famous Supreme Court case where a person was arrested for wearing a T-shirt in a mm-hmm. courtroom that had, you know, it said F the draft.
Right.
And there was a whole controversy in the court's opinion about, you know, the court never uses the word.
Right.
But there was, the conclusion was, no, saying that is different than saying anything else, right? Having a T-shirt that says down with the draft or I'm opposed to the draft mm-hmm. is not the same thing as having a shirt that says F the draft.
Which is true.
Yeah. And so it's just a reminder of how important that how things are said, like you just said in the groundbreaking training, really reflects, you know, what the intent is and what the meaning is. And as we know, comes particularly when we're talking about issues of race and discrimination, you know, really comes loaded with historical context, mm-hmm. with social meaning, with, you know, colloquial information that makes how things are said so important.
Yeah. Speaking with Mark Dorison, chair of the Orange County Board of Commissioners. So let's talk about, moving from that, let's talk about gerrymandering.
Yes.
This district court case, which is now about to be a Supreme Court case because Republicans just appealed up to Chief Justice Roberts for a stay. Partisan gerrymandering struck down as unconstitutional in North North Carolina for the first time ever. Supreme Court's dealing with that case out of Wisconsin now. There's another one out of Maryland, which is a case where Democrats did it, right? In
That's
Maryland,
right.
And then in Wisconsin, North Carolina, it's Republicans. What are your thoughts on this? This is significant.
It's tremendous. It's so exciting. And you know, the North Carolina case is a little different because it's dealing with the, you know, the U.S. congressional mm-hmm. districts. So it's a little different than the Wisconsin, which was a state redistricting, and I think the Maryland also. But it's a powerful decision. Judge Wynn from the Fourth Circuit, very eloquent and powerful. And the truth is, you know, the facts in the North Carolina case are compelling. You know, you have a state Republican state legislator who says on the record that we want to draw this in a way to maximize the Republican districts. He said, you know, he says if they could draw it so it was better than 10-3, then we should do that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's you know, for decades, the court was very reluctant to get involved in things like how districts are drawn, going back, you know, to the one person, one vote decision, Baker versus Carr, which is a 1960 decision about, you know, having districts be of the same size, you know, relatively speaking, the number of people represented. And the court in that case really struggled about even that question, which to us seems so obvious, right? That districts should be roughly the same population. But even in that case, the court struggled with this is something that is in the political realm. It's not, it doesn't belong in the court. It's non-justiciable, as mm-hmm. they would say. And so to have come from there to this understanding now, that this hyper-partisan gerrymandering really thwarts the democratic process, is, I think we're on the precipice of something very hopeful and
yeah.
something very meaningful.
And I think it's important to recognize that we have gone through this before with regard to, you mentioned one person, one vote with Baker v. Carr, racial gerrymandering cases the courts have stepped in. And I think that's worth noting because the one, I think, point that is worth sort of paying attention to and respecting and responding to, Dallas Woodhouse, who's the GOP executive director?
Yeah, I think he's the executive director.
Yeah, this, major spokesperson for the GOP, did make this point, which is that if the Supreme Court takes this case and rules that partisan gerrymandering is unconstitutional, they're opening up a Pandora's box. Pandora's box was his phrase, where you could have a whole bunch of different cases challenged. He may well be right about that, but the same argument was made in 1960 when the Supreme Court was dealing with that one person, one vote case. The same argument could be and has been made in racial gerrymandering cases as well. It's not wrong, but there are times when the Supreme Court has to step in anyway because the current system is so egregiously a violation of several constitutional principles that, sure, you open up the opportunity, you open up the possibility that there are going to be a whole bunch of cases challenged, but you do that in order to stand up for the Constitution one way or the other.
That's exactly right, Aaron. And, you know, the fact that it opens up a whole bunch of cases, I mean, at some point, the court will find the line,
mm-hmm.
But where it is now is clearly, I think, now been recognized by this court and by other courts as being unconstitutional. And so the idea that this may happen in a lot of different states and may have to be examined in each of those states is the reality of the manipulation of the way the political process has evolved. And I think, you know, the evidence is really compelling when you have states where the partisan split is relatively even or and yet the districts are so gerrymandered that one party is able to control, you know, a hyper majority of seats. It shows that the idea of representation and being able to elect candidates of choice is really being thwarted. Mm-hmm.
And the ruling that came down on Tuesday from the three judges made a point that I had not even thought of. I mean, we think about this as like a 14th Amendment equal protection case, and I get that argument. They referred to, what was it, Article 1, Section 2 or something like that, the line at the very beginning of the Constitution where it just says very simply, the people shall elect their representatives. And Judge Wynn and others are looking at this and saying, look, you had, and we've made this point on the air before, and Jane Pinsky from the Coalition for Lobbying and Government Reform has made this point really well, that in 2012 in North Carolina, it was a pretty big sweep year for the Democrats. 2014 was a big sweep year for the Republicans. 2016, fairly even split. At no point did the makeup of the congressional delegation change. It was 10-3, 10-3, 10-3, because it literally doesn't matter how North Carolinians vote, the makeup is going to be the same regardless of because of the way the lines are drawn, regardless of how we vote. And that actually does run into a situation where we're not electing our representatives.
I think that is well said, and I think the point made in the opinion on that, and others who have used the phrase, you know, the people aren't selecting their representatives, the representatives are selecting their people, is very accurate. And so, and the other thing it's important to keep in mind, and you know, not only is the will of the voters being thwarted, but when you have these hyper gerrymandered districts, there's also no accountability, right? So I mean, if the party knows either that its current candidate or some other candidate from the party will have that seat no matter what, then there's no accountability to the voters. There's no requirement for collaboration or cooperation. And, you know, there's been a lot of studies that show when you have this hyper-partisanship, it actually creates more hyper-partisanship, right? So in a hyper-partisan Democrat or a hyper-partisan Republican district, you know, the way you get elected is being by being more extreme than the next person. So you tend to gravitate towards even more extreme positions. Yeah. And that undermines effective representation as well.
Speaking with Mark Dorison, chair of the Orange County Board of Commissioners, we're talking civil rights here, so civil rights attorney as well. So let me, a couple of questions. First of all of this is happening in the context of the fact that the Supreme Court has heard oral arguments in Gil v. Whitford, which is this partisan gerrymandering case out of Wisconsin. And one of the arguments, which also kind of makes sense to me, is, well, why is this decision coming down in North Carolina? Why are we not waiting to hear what the Supreme Court says there? Is there a circumstance where the Supreme Court could rule one way in the Wisconsin case and a different way in North Carolina? Are the arguments different, or does, if they rule X way in Wisconsin, is it just automatically going to mean basically that they'll rule the same way here?
Well, I think it really depends on the scope of the ruling. I mean, I think the primary question is whether, you know, again, whether partisan gerrymandering is something that the court can weigh in on, whether it's a justiciable issue. And there have been a couple of cases in the past where the court has split on that question. Several justices said, no, it doesn't belong here. Several justices says, well, I wouldn't say that, but this isn't the right case. I don't see the evidence. And so I think as a threshold matter, if the court is going to resolve that, and I think once it does, then depending on how it makes that determination, if it is justiciable, if it is an issue the court can determine, then what it is also going to have to do is give some kind of guidance on how you make that determination. Okay, if partisan gerrymandering is a constitutional violation, then how do you assess the facts to say, this instance is a violation, this instance is not a violation? So I think we're going to get some, I'm hoping that we'll get some real guidance that will answer those initial questions and will help resolve the North Carolina situation. I mean, yeah. I think you've got the Wisconsin case, you've got the Maryland case, now you've got the North Carolina case. I mean, it's possible that they'll all three be put together for the court's consideration, since they each have a little bit of a different factual scenario. But hopefully we'll get something that is more definitive. I mean, especially for North Carolina, it's 2018. This redistricting that's at issue originally happened after the 2010 census. So, and the legislature's been at it a couple of times, but we're still working off the original redistricting in the wake of that census. So, and you know, it's been going on most of the decade.
Yeah. And with that in mind, and this is the other point, which isn't even really a question, like the fact that this is the third time at this point we've gone around this circle just in this decade, and went through the same thing in the 2000s and in the 1990s when Democrats were in charge, years-long court fights there. Regardless of how the legal fight plays out, the Supreme Court could strike down partisan gerrymandering, or they could say it's not justiciable, or the standard isn't there, and in this case we're going to let it fly on constitutional grounds. You could still have the General Assembly or voters going to the polls and kicking the bums out and replacing them with people who will replace the current system through the political process with a nonpartisan redistricting commission or something to take this power out of the hands of the people who stand to benefit directly from it. That's something that could be done and should be done through the political process, regardless of how the legal case plays out.
I would hope. And, you know, there were a couple of bills introduced in the last couple of years about nonpartisan redistricting. They didn't get, you know, they got a little bit of traction, but not much. Mm-hmm. You know, they're, I think all the bills envisioned it happening in several years out. But certainly that this issue, it's not unique to North Carolina, as we've been talking. It's happening all over the country. And I think that we're at a point where, going back, you know, to the Citizens United decision about the flow of money into mm-hmm. political elections, combined with the gerrymandering issues around voter ID, I think the issue of are the elections process fair is one that in a lot of ways transcends partisanship. And, you know, you're not talking about debating substantive issues, you know, should taxes be higher or should taxes be lower, but you're talking about how does the process work. And that concerns people all across the board. And I think you're seeing that, too, and as the legislature has started debating this getting rid of judicial elections idea and judicial redistricting, we're starting to see folks, you know, the idea of taking away the right to vote concerns lots of folks.
Mm-hmm. Speaking with Mark Dorison, we've been talking about this case this whole time. What's going on in Orange County that people ought to know about?
Well, we were going to start meeting again in a couple of weeks. There's a lot of, you know, we've got a lot of interesting stuff coming up. We've got a meeting on the 23rd of January where we're going to be talking about the Mountains to Sea Trail. The commissioners have an opportunity to approve a route for the Orange County portion of that. We're going to be looking at, we had commissioned a tax equity study that we're finally going to be getting back, looking at, you know, how much do services costs and how much do taxes offset on those, really getting a sense of what the costs are. And then we've got an assembly of governments meeting, which will be coming up at the end of January, which is all the local governments in the county get together. And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about there, including the Green Tract and affordable mm-hmm. housing. There's going to be a conversation about manufactured housing and potential threats to manufactured housing parks in Chapel Hill and Carrboro, and what happens if one of those gets sold and folks need, you know, relocation and mm-hmm. rehousing. So I think, you know, affordable housing continues to be right at the forefront of a lot of people's minds. We're still looking, hoping to get something positive about class sizes. And we'll be starting, you know, soon we'll be starting the budget process. So that's always, and those decisions, those issues all weigh into that.
OrangeCountyNC.gov for more information on county government affairs. Mark Dorison, thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's great to see you, Aaron.